Any rebroadcast, reproduction, or other use of this show without the express written consent of the Financial Guys LLC is strictly prohibited.
Securities offered through Peak Broker Services, member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advisory services offered through Independent Solutions Wealth Management or BlackRidge Asset Management. Financial Guys, Independent Solutions, and BlackRidge Asset Management are not affiliated with Peak Broker Services.
You're listening to the Financial Guys.
We're $23 trillion in debt, honey. We don't have an extra surplus of money.
Newsflash, guys. Stop attacking businesses, because when all the businesses are gone, nobody's going to pay your salary anymore. You get that?
If the goal is to create a loser mentality, well, you're winning.
I'm going to build a big, beautiful wall with a big, beautiful door. Well, guess what? We have a big, beautiful door, all right. It's the wide
it's
open 90%. Southern border, right?
Yeah.
Here's Glenn Wiggle and Mike Lomas.
All right, welcome back to the TFG podcast. Thanks again for joining. I'm Glenn Wiggle, in with a special guest today, Tony Oliva, Antonio Oliva, and we're going to talk a little about communism today. If you need us throughout the week, folks, I just want to put it out there. Go to our website, thefinancialguys.com. Thank you again for all the downloads on YouTube, all the downloads for all the different podcast channels that we're on, iTunes, Spotify, Google Android Store, iHeartRadio, radio.com. We're everywhere. So if you found us, if you're listening, if you're on YouTube, there's an audio version that comes out on Tuesdays. If you're listening on Tuesdays, there's a video version that comes out on Thursdays. So you can watch both, and we do appreciate it. And if we are very active on all the social media platforms, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. So if you want to follow us, again, go to our website. You can find all the different things that we do there and all the different contacts there and all of our team there as well. We are a one-stop financial shop, the place where money meets politics. And you can go, again, to our website, thefinancialguys.com. I wanted to do a special show. We've done some shows in the past with my friend Tony Oliva here, and it's they're always very well received. And, in the past we've had just rave reviews from when you've been on the radio show. And, radio sometimes is tougher because it's Saturday. I don't want to work you every Saturday, right? But the podcast is easier because we can do it during the week. You know, a couple things I started to see, Tony, and that really bothered me is I've got a couple articles here that I just want to read, and then we'll kind of get to you a little bit of your story, but I need some glasses to do that. This came out of U.S. News, the Federalist Papers. Michigan's Governor Whitmer administration wants to make the state's COVID restrictions on business permanent. And, you know, what I'm seeing across the country, you know, we're down in Florida right now, and, you know, we have a conference coming up next week, our annual conference of the year. But, you know, what I'm seeing in the, you know, obviously coming from New York and being in Buffalo and watching Governor Cuomo, watching Governor Whitmer, watching Governor Wolf in Pennsylvania and so on, I mean, all of these Democrats, they're always, you know, yelling at the conservatives, oh, Trump's a dictator. And yet they're the actual ones that want to keep all these restrictions in place. So Whitmer told the viewers of Face the Nation, we're seeing a surge in Michigan despite the fact that we have some of the strongest policies in place. Mask mandates, capacity limits, working from home. We've asked our state for a two-week pause. Now, listen, genius, you have, as to your own admission, you have had some of the strongest policies when it's come to lockdowns and mask mandates and capacity limits of working from home. And yet, you are one of the highest in the nation. In complete contrast, Texas has opened its state with zero restrictions, including mandates for wearing masks inside businesses, and saw record lows in positive COVID numbers. And yet, these folks like Governor Whitmer, Governor Cuomo, they want to keep these restrictions in place. They want to have the ability to shut down your business when they want to shut it down. They want to be able to tell you when you can leave your house and when you cannot leave your house. In places like France now, they are restricting air travel to places that you can go by train. So, of course, it won't impact them, right? Never does, right? Never impacts the you know, a John Kerry. You know, it won't impact a Macron, right? He'll still be flying all over France on his private jet, right? He's not going to take the train, right? Kerry's not taking the train. You know, Kamala Harris isn't taking the train, right? None of these people have had to not get their hair cut, right? Famously, we saw Nancy Pelosi in California, San Francisco, getting her hair done. No mask, by the way, right? Governor Newsom, no indoor dining whatsoever in California, gets busted in the French Laundry restaurant, right? No mask on in a private room. So, you know, rules for thee, but not for me is what we have. And that's pretty much, you know, the trend. Oregon, another article here. This is coming out of the New York Post. Seeks to keep COVID mask mandate indefinitely. While some states are reopening businesses and dropping mask mandates altogether, Oregon is bucking the trend, floating an idea to require masks and social distancing forever which is ridiculous, right? One of the state's top health officials wants to require masks and social distancing on all businesses indefinitely. Indefinitely, folks. This is what we say about communists. They don't give back power unless you rip it back out of their hands, unless you take it back. Tony Oliva is a longtime friend of mine, a longtime colleague of mine, as well as my Florida translator. So I really appreciate that because you speak, obviously, fluent Spanish. Your family is from Cuba. You were born in Cuba, came to this country as a very young child. And so although you didn't grow up necessarily in Cuba, you know, under the communist regime, you know, I think the experiences of your father, your family, your relatives, I can see that in the things that you do. Like, nothing goes to waste, right? You repurpose everything. I've gotten to know that about you, right? Because when you're in a communist country, you're not living large. Like, we're a disposable country in the United States of America, right? We take things, we use them up, we throw them in the garbage as if there's an endless supply of goods and services, right? In a communist country, that's not the case, right? So tell me a little bit about, you know, your childhood, your upbringing, and then, you know, what you learned really from, you know, and obviously we want to do the show this week, by the way, because something historic happened, right? Fidel Castro, his brother Raul, is stepping down, right? Not that they're going to go to an open election or anything, but, you know, talk to me about, you know, your past and you know, Cuba in general.
I'm going to answer first about the Raul Castro. Fidel Castro was the natural leader of that Communist Party. He knew that eventually something would happen to him, so he let Raul Castro set him up to become the new dictator, which he truly never was. So because of that, Fidel Castro created a new Communist Party years ago. So Cuba's been run by the Communist Party that Fidel Castro left in power. And then if you look at Raul, he's a figurehead, very, very similar to what's happening in this country right now. He's just a figurehead. He's a very, very weak, weak man. So him leaving Cuba will not affect Cuba or the policies of Cuba whatsoever. The Communist Party runs it.
So as a figurehead, you know, so that's like we talk in our country, we call it the deep state, right? The deep state seems to be running things. You know, I know President Trump tried to fight the deep state, yep, but it is so entrenched in our Department of Justice, our corrupt FBI, which is clearly corrupt, right? They're going after conservatives and patriots who, you know, were in Washington, may or may not even been at the Capitol, and yet BLM is allowed to burn, loot, and rob and murder people across the country with not a peep from the FBI. So is that the same thing in with the communist Cuba? Raul is just kind of there. He's the puppet, but really it's the military leaders, or who is it that's behind the scenes in that communist party in Cuba, you think?
The good thing, I don't know his name right now, but I can have a clear picture of a very, very tall Cuban. Blonde hair, looks honestly Russian, white skin, but he runs that country, and he runs it just as strict as Fidel Castro did. Mm-hmm. And so I've recently talked to Cubans in Cuba, that's the modern internet today, and they tell me the whole country is shut down except for Russians. Mm-hmm. Russians are allowed to fly in, fly out, they can do anything they want. Not even the Canadians that used to go there freely are allowed in anymore.
Right.
So it's still the same crap. I apologize, but that's what it is.
Well, this is a podcast, so we can actually even swear here. This is a good thing.
Oh,
so
good.
So talk to me about, you came here when you were very young. You were 3 years old, I believe, right?
I was 3.5 years old. And this is very, very important for everyone in this country. This country needs to learn. This country has forgot its basic lessons of life. I was 3.5 years old. I came with the clothes on my back. Now, I'll be honest with you, that was 1962. Today, I can actually sit here and actually openly say anything I want in this country right now, I can have.
Well, that's probably because of your skin color, though, right?
It has nothing to do with my skin color. It has, honestly.
So you weren't handed stuff, Tony? You weren't, because you were a white male, you weren't just automatically given the keys to the kingdom and here you go, here's your success?
No, I will say you actually said a comment today. I'm going to kind of correct what you said about me, let's say, refurbishing things. Mm-hmm. When I was a child, we were so poor that I didn't have a bicycle. I had three. Because walking home from school, which, by the way, was probably about 8 mile walk. There were no buses. I'd find an old bicycle on the side of the road. I'd pick it up, drag it home. Next day, if I found another one, I'd drag it home. And today, I know how to rebuild bikes. And that's how I got my first bike. Mm-hmm. So, and then in the end, I had another bike. So, but I had three other siblings, and somebody got on a bike. We had bikes, and that's how we got bikes. Mm-hmm. So, and no matter what, and if you find a piece of wood, you never know. If it's a good piece of wood, you save it. And sometimes it is junk, but sometimes you'll be surprised you're going to need a piece of wood. So I was told, basically, as a small child, anything you want in this country, all you have to do is work for it. You earn money. And the other thing is, I'm going to say, we don't talk about this country. I was raised by my father, first of all, to be anti-communist. Mm-hmm. Where people today sit at a table and maybe before they have dinner or after dinner, they pray. My father raised us in a way, I must say, more my brother and myself. He instilled fear into us. And one of the things he told us about communism is you have to be very, very, very careful. They're here too. Mm-hmm. On the ballot when John F. Kennedy ran, there was the American Communist Party. And by the way, if you carefully looked at your ballots when you voted for this president, there was the American Communist Party. It is here. Mm-hmm. So today, I mean, the definition between communism and the Democratic Party, it's just a spelling.
Yeah. Well, in New York, we actually have open card-carrying communists in our legislature. They are proud to say, I am a – they call themselves either Democrat Socialist or, yeah, or Democratic Communist. I think they're just completely ignorant. And I – you yeah. know – It's amazing to me the you know, when you live it. You know, I've talked to we're in South Florida right now. We have an office in South Florida. I have a house in South Florida as well as in New York, and I have an opportunity, you know, to talk to a lot of different folks, not only from Cuba but also from Venezuela, right? And Venezuela is really more current for them, right? When you talk to folks that are here that have family there. You know, Cuba has stabilized to a degree, right? Yes, there's no, it's not a free and open country. You know, yes, people are dirt poor. I mean, I remember the big thing that stuck with me was when, back when Fidel was still alive, he said, I'm giving everybody rice cookers. That was a big thing, right? So you can make more rice faster, as if somehow that was, benevolence. But in Venezuela, they're in even rougher shape right now because they are literally starving to death. There's no medicine. There's no food. There's no electricity. In many towns there, they have running water maybe once a week, maybe once a month. You know, that maybe they have electricity for a few hours a day. And we haven't – the media in this country, for a while there, we were talking and seeing things about Venezuela. Have you noticed that there has not been a single story? There's not been any media coverage about what's been going on in Venezuela at all, as if somehow it's miraculously just gotten better, right? Mm-hmm. But it hasn't. And so when you talk to these folks, you can see, you know, the almost the mental scars to a degree of, you know, the fear when they see things in this country that are starting to happen, right? It's very eerily reminiscent. I don't think we have two parties anymore. I think people say, well, we have a two-party system. I don't know, we don't. We have a political class. And then we have a working class. The political elites are on both sides. They include people like Mitch McConnell, you know, Cocaine Mitch, who I just can't even stand, right? John Boehner, I didn't like either, right? Paul Ryan. I can think of a lot of Republicans that I just literally detest as much as I detest a Joe Biden or a Kamala Harris, right? They're equally evil in lining their own pockets at the expense of everybody else. And that's typically what socialists and communists do, right? Absolutely. They line their own pockets. They make themselves wealthy. Everybody else suffers, no matter what political party you're in, right? Mm-hmm.
Fidel Castro had 20 mansions.
Right.
20 mansions. Well, that poor country starved to death. And by the way, Cuba has not changed. They're still starving.
Yeah.
They're still starving.
You don't hear about that either, though. You don't get the news.
When you make ground beef in Cuba out of banana leaves, imagine that, fried banana leaves, and you pretend it's ground beef because there's no pig.
Yeah.
And then the animals, if you have an animal, you literally have to bring the animal into your house. Your own neighbors will kill your animal because they're starving to death.
Yeah. Well, that's certainly the case in Venezuela.
Yeah. I mean,
you see the stories out of Venezuela about they used to have, you know, donkeys roving the hillside, you know, wild donkeys. They're all gone. They've all been eaten.
Yep.
The zoos, they've broken into the zoos. They've eaten the animals in the zoo. They've had to eat their own pets. I know it's hard to believe, folks. And I know people that are listening to this podcast might be like, oh, you know, there's no media coverage. So CNN tells me everything's doing great, right? Those are friends that are people you might be talking to. Please educate them. Please share this podcast with them. You know, this is somebody who's been there, knows it, family there. And again, it's the evils of communism and socialism. I'll lump the two together. I mean, socialism is just one stop on the way to full communism, right? It's just a different spelling, is my mind, is really all it is, right? The same thing happens with socialism, right? You see people enrich themselves at the top at the expense of everybody else. All these fools with these universities that are being taught this crap, they say, wow, we want to return the means of production back to the people, right? That's something that sounds like, Gorbachev would say or Fidel would even say. We got to return. We own this country ourselves as a people. This is ours. No elites are going to take it while he as an elite is taking it all.
Absolutely. And then I'll go back to my father's teaching as a small child. Sitting at that table with my brother and I, he says, there's only one thing, and you really have to hear this one word, and it will change your life as the way you think. Envy. He says, communism is 100% about envy. My father came from a family of 12. My mother came from a family of 11. Now, in that country, they didn't want to come to this country. Understand, I am not an immigrant. I am a political asylumee. I didn't want to come here, per se. My parents didn't want to come here, but they didn't agree with the politics, and this country was nice enough to invite us in. That's it. Mm-hmm. We were invited in, but we were sponsored by an aunt and uncle that had already been here, and they had to pay to get us out of that country. Mm-hmm. So, but my father warned us, communism is here. He told us we could never visit communist Cuba because I am still, whether I like it or not, a Cuban citizen in Cuba. So at a young age, the communist government could actually snatch me up and stick me in their communist government. So he says, don't ever, ever go. My sister and my mother went back to visit, and we wanted to go as kids, and we were never allowed to go because he was afraid of it. But envy was the very, very, very biggest problem, and it's still, envy is here everywhere you look.
Well, you see the seeds of envy being sowed, right? You didn't build that. Somebody else made that happen. You know, the top 1%, they should be spreading the wealth around, right? You hear all these catchphrases, right? Yeah. You know, the Occupy Wall Street was all about the 99%. And what these kids don't realize, and I call them kids, some are adults, but mentally they're children. Let's be honest here, right? Because they don't understand. They're ignorant to the information that's right in front of them about the fact that they're supporting something that will make people poorer. Right. They're chanting on Occupy Wall Street years ago to say, we got to get the 1%, you know, take the money, give it to 99. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to support socialism because those same people in the top 1% are telling the other 99%, don't worry, vote for me. We'll take care of you. We'll make it better for you. And in every single circumstance, I don't care if it's Baltimore, New York City, Detroit, Chicago, L.A., San Francisco. Tell me one place where Democrats have made things better. I mean, I can't say all Democrats. I don't want to paint it with a broad brush. Let me paint it with politicians. Some politicians have the best of hearts, and they have the right intentions, and some do good things. Very, very few. I would say that's 1%. The other 99% are there to enrich themselves or their families, right? They're there to become career politicians. They're not there to make the poor less poor, because by keeping people poor, they keep people dependent. And by keeping people dependent, they keep people loyal, right? And those loyal people are loyal votes, and that's how they maintain their power. It never gets better for the people on the east side of Buffalo. The conditions are not improving in the school systems, right? Things are not, you know, the economic opportunity in cities like Rochester, New York, are not getting better. In fact, Buffalo and Rochester, I believe, are third and fourth in the country on a percent of child poverty, right? Fourth highest child poverty in the country is Buffalo. How could that be? 50 years of Democrat control. How have things not gotten better? And yet people can't figure it out. And the ones that continue to support that support their own, demise to a degree. It's unreal.
Yep. I've heard you mention children. Communism can only be stopped in one place. That's at home. And honestly, you keep talking about children, but you got to start with a parent.
Yeah.
There's usually one parent that is weaker than the other. And I am not judging anyone, man or woman, because I have clients, husband and wives, and it's the husband that's the weakest of the two. The children always run to him. yeah. and so on. But somebody's going to have to be stern. And if you educate your children at a very, very young age, and one of the things, and Glenn and I talked about this, is work ethics. I remember being 5 years old and my father coming and saying, wake up. And that was it. And I knew at 5 years old, I had to go to work. At 5 years old, either I was going to work. By that time, honestly, I was working with my brother. He was seven. We were mowing lawns. We were doing edging with a machete. No edgers back then. We were raking the yard, the whole yard, for $3. The whole yard. I realized cost of living for him. But my father instilled work ethics. And if you go to work as a very, very young child, you learn to say, I'm not going to waste this dollar. I'm not going to waste this dollar because it took me a lot to earn it.
That's right.
Yes, I have my toys. But trust me, I have also saved up more than the average person because I meet the average person. And I always ask, who sold you on this stupid plan? And it's the parents. It's always the parents, not the child. Mm-hmm. And if you put the right things into a child's mind at a young age, when they finally go to these liberal teachers and these liberal professors, they will say, I know this is bullshit. My parents taught me right. I know this is bullshit. And got to start at home. Especially with work ethics. If your child doesn't want to get up, if your child, by the way, I pity the children today, they're addicted to gaming. That's an addiction, an actual addiction.
Yeah, I agree.
There is no medication for that. The only thing you can do, honestly, and the parents don't want to do it either, turn off the internet. Take away their cell phone. Destroy their cell phone. I love the one commercial where the father takes the kid's game because he stays up all night, puts them on the yard and runs them over with a riding lawnmower.
the game, not the kid.
No, exactly.
Just to be clear.
But the kid, but he gave the kid an offer. The kid wanted to grab him. It's like, grab him right as he's roaring up, and he did destroy. Yeah. The kid threatened he ruined his life. Not a kid. He was a 24-year-old man.
Well, that's
man
why I called them
lived
kids.
Lived with daddy.
Yeah, well, I call them kids. I mean, again, a lot of these kids are adult children. That's what they are.
Yeah.
But I got to say, a lot of adults that are 40, 50, they're the teachers or the professors. Mentally, they're children. I mean, I got to say, I mean, they're like, as Mike would say, they're mental midgets. How do you not, as an adult, understand the evils of communism when we have it right? You have history as the guide. Millions and millions of people in China under Stalin and Russia, you know, Mao and China have been, you know, killed, have died, whether they were murdered, whether they just died from starvation. Look at Venezuela. I mean, you're talking about thousands and thousands of people that have passed away because they didn't have medicine or they didn't have food, they didn't have facilities. When I was a kid, very similar, you know, my family on my mom's side, same thing, you know, had to be sponsored. That's how it was back then, right? My father's side has been here since the 1500s. So we are 1600s, early on in this country. In fact, I've got family that served under George Washington's army in the Revolutionary War. I've got family that fought in the Civil War. So my family on my father's side goes back to the building of the Erie Canal. I mean, you're talking hundreds and hundreds of years. They were, I've got the whole genealogy, one of the first ships that came from England is where my family's originally from. But on my mom's side, they're the Italian. So the Italian side didn't come here until the 19-teens, right? That was when the big Italian, you know, as the Cuban migration came here in the 50s and early 60s, as the refugee plan, as Fidel took over in Italy and in places like Ireland, that mass migration happened in the early part of the latter century. And so when they came, it was the same thing. It was the relatives here that were already here had to sponsor the rest of the relatives. They had to sign off on a legal document that said none of the people coming in from Italy or anywhere else would take any sort of welfare. Of course, it wasn't much welfare back then. This was pre-New Deal, right? This was before, you know, the great society of FDR and all the Social Security, Medicare, all those things. So there wasn't a lot of welfare to begin with, but they still had to agree. Now, when I was a kid, my mom, who came from nothing, right? My parents, my father, with my uncle and my grandparents, lived in a two-bedroom apartment their whole life until we moved out and bought a house, of course. But my grandmother lived to the day that she died at 95 in that same apartment, a little tiny two-bedroom apartment on Cleve Hill Drive in Buffalo. It's amazing. And so they did well for themselves. Both my parents worked. My mom was high in administration. My dad was a business owner. I'm now since retired, you know, owned a large CPA firm in Buffalo. But they would tell me when I was a kid, both of them, and my mom especially, you could do anything that you put your mind to in this country. That's the best part about this country. If you want to be an astronaut, you have the intelligence and the ability. And even if you don't have the intelligence, well, that's what you do. But your drive and motivation, hard work, will get you anywhere you want to go in this country. You can always increase your intelligence. You can always increase your knowledge. But what you have to have is that drive. When I was very young, probably 9, 10 years old, I wanted a go-kart so bad. So I lived in a town called Depew up north. Depew is where a lot of, you know, I would say car guys live, right? That's where I grew up initially when I was real young. I moved when I was 12. But all the people in my neighborhood, their parents were car guys. Their dads were car guys. So they were building them go-karts from lawnmower engines and mini bikes. Well, my dad was an accountant, right? He did taxes. He couldn't build anything, right? He didn't know how to build a go-kart. So he said to me, you know, listen, you want to buy a go-kart? I'll take you to buy one. Let's figure out what the prices are. And then, so I figured out it was $600 for the go-kart I wanted. $600. Boy, that was like a mountain back then, right? And I said, great, let's go get it. He goes, oh, no. You have $600? I said, no. He goes, well, let me know when you got it. And so I, for like 2 years, literally 2 years, I mowed every lawn and shoveled every driveway I could until I had enough money to buy that go-kart. And I bought that go-kart, and I rode that go-kart for years and years and years and years. But because I had earned it, it meant so much more to me. And you know, today, you know, as everybody knows, you know, we run a one-stop financial shop. We have all these different companies. I think Mike and I have, you know, 9 or 10 different businesses that we, you know, obviously the Financial Guys is our key primary business. That's the wealth management side of things. We also own Independent Solutions, which is an investment advisory firm. That all that does is wealth management, no financial planning, just wealth management. And then, of course, there's the PNC and the other businesses. You can do anything in this country if you put your mind to it and you have hard work. Today, I hear a lot of these kids, and I hear, because now my daughter's a junior in college and my other daughter's a senior in high school. And sometimes I hear, from other kids that are, you know, friends or whatnot that are around, and most, you know, they got great kids, a great friend, a lot of great kids out there. I would say there's two types of kids out there. There's the real rock stars, and we've been able to hire some amazing young talent to our organization over the years. I mean, we've been really, really fortunate. But then there's those kids that, you know, they just seem like they have this attitude like a chip on their shoulder, as if somehow their view of life is, I can't get ahead because of something else, because I don't, you know, I'm growing up in a single parent household, or because, you know, my family doesn't have, you know, money or whatever, you know, or because of the color of my skin, or maybe it's because of this, because I'm a woman. I hear that a lot. I can't get ahead because it's not fair to women in this country. Really? There's a female vice president who, by the way, was picked specifically for the color of her skin. I don't know if that's not privilege. I'm not sure what is. But the fact is that a lot of these kids today, Tony, are being told you can't do that because somebody else is holding you down, right? You can't get ahead because the system is rigged against you, right? Mm-hmm. That's what these kids are being told by these professors. It's an unjust society. So rail against the elite people and try to change it. But the way they try to change it is in a negative way. They try to change it. They want this big government that they say is not fair, and they want government to somehow make things fair. Well, they don't realize that the things are unfair either in your mind or because of government, right? There are a lot of things that government makes unfair because of regulations and things like that, right? Very difficult for people to go out and start certain businesses because of government, because of the regulatory environment that government has created. It's not somebody else that, you know, some individual or some race or ethnicity or sex or whatever that's keeping you down. It's probably the crushing weight of the federal bureaucracy in a lot of cases. But these kids aren't taught that. These kids are taught that, you know, America is a bad country to begin with. I hear that more and more, these kids being taught that we are an inherently racist country. Somehow we're a racist country that invited everybody in from all over the world, right? Cubans and, you know, Salvadorians and Venezuelans and Russians and Italians and all kinds of folks throughout the world. It's just sad what's going on in our education system, and it really frustrates the hell out of me. It really does. So, you know, hearing what your dad told you, and obviously you've been, you know, super successful, coming from literally nothing, right? Coming from dirt poor, coming to this country with the clothes on your back, to a point where, you know, you have achieved, you know, financial independence, we'll call it, right? Where you don't have to worry about, you know, budgeting or counting things. You know, that wasn't handed to you. And it wasn't because of your skin color. It was because you worked hard, right? You had the right attitude. You worked hard. And you saw America for what the benefit was, right? The ability to put your mind and do anything you want in this country is really amazing. You know, when anybody tells me, well, you know, because of the, you know, they're a woman, they can't get ahead. Well, explain to me all the women business owners out there. Well, immigrants, you know, we discriminate against them. Well, how is it that anyone who comes here from like India or China, you know, seems like they thrive? I don't know. I mean, when you look at, let's take Asians in this country, they're the top in the education spectrum, right? They're the least likely to take any sort of welfare benefits, right? They're the least likely to be involved in any sort of crime, right? They seem like they're doing pretty damn well. And so it's hard to say, well, people are discriminating against Asians. Well, somehow they found a way to get around it, and they're doing phenomenal, which is great because they have that attitude. They're leaving a communist China, right? They know what America is, and they seize upon that opportunity. And they take advantage of it, which is a wonderful thing, and they do very well because of it. Somehow we need to take over the education system. We need to take it back, and we need to start, you know, teaching these kids that, you know, this country is the best country on the planet. I don't know of a better country. I don't know where I would want to go, and that's what I try to ask people that are like, well, this country is inherently, where's better? You know, they mix up Britain and America, where, well, we colonized the world. No, America didn't colonize anything. Now, Britain colonized a lot of the world. We're not Britain. You know, you want to be, you know, aggravated because, you know, a legacy of colonization. You know, point the finger across the pond to the Brits, because they were a big part of who did that. We never did that. You know, they colonized America. We took it back, right? We fought for our independence from them, right? I don't know. Somehow that's all changed.
Yeah. I'll tell you a couple of words I'm going to add. My father also taught us pride. Pride in yourself, I think that's missing. Pride was, again, growing with nothing. Yeah, we got what you would call welfare. And my father explained all this free food. And by the way, it was horrible. But it was all we had. So we ate what we had.
Yeah.
One of the things that changed my life is the day I found a tangerine tree. I ate so many tangerines that I was sick. But I didn't have to eat that night because I had tangerines. And I knew it was going to be more. Go back to that tangerine tree. But the pride, if you have pride in yourself, you'll say, I cannot take welfare. I cannot be on welfare. This is embarrassing to me, to my family, and to everybody around me that knows I'm on an EBT card. I had to go find out what that meant. It's welfare. So if you instill pride in your children and tell them, don't ever go on welfare, there's now a whole new generation of people that want to be on unemployment. Unemployment is a savings account. It is not for free. You have a certain amount of money, and once you run out of money, the day you truly, truly need it, there will be no money in your account. So I know you're going to, oh, the government. The government has no money. The government has no money. I pay taxes. I pay more than my fair share, and I gladly do it to know that I can sleep at night. I've got a military. I've got sidewalks. I've got roads. I got bridges, I got police officers worrying about everything else that I don't have to worry about.
Right.
So I got no problem paying taxes. But the pride, I think today people don't have pride in themselves. The family, I'm going to go back, you keep blaming the education. It starts at the family. If the family would teach the children, if the children don't want to learn, that's fine. Let them go. I will never forget the day my father said, in this house, there is but one king. That's when I got too big for my pants. Yep. But I will say this, it instilled me. I took it positively. I said, I got to get myself a castle.
That's right.
So by the age of 24, I owned a brand new villa, and it was the most expensive villa in that whole development. I worked and I worked and I worked and I sacrificed and I saved money. And the other thing is I kept excellent credit. Don't gamble your credit. That credit can come back and bite you when you don't have it.
Yeah.
Or you'll pay more.
Yeah.
So that's a big thing. Pride is missing from this country.
Yeah, no question about that. When you see what I'm seeing now with our politicians in this country, they're talking about, you know, free money for all, right? We, you know, there's actual politicians mm-hmm. like Andrew Yang that and there's certain towns and counties like L.A. that are giving basically what they call a basic universal income, as if everybody deserves a basic universal income, right? I was taught that you deserve the opportunity to pursue, you know, your dreams and to pursue happiness and liberty and all that good stuff, right? But these kids today, and again, a lot of these leaders now, you've got Andrew Yang is running for mayor, I believe, in New York City, although I thought he was from L.A., but maybe he's not. But he was one of the big people in the Democrat primary. That was one of his big platform of points was, you know, $2,000 a month for everybody. You know, let's just give free money for all, right? Why does that not work? I mean, that's been, you know, it's been tried. It's failed. I don't know, you know, it doesn't seem like in places where they have promised to take care of all those things, your energy, your food and your money and your monthly income, that's never worked anywhere to my knowledge. Has it?
Nope, doesn't work. And I'll tell you, I told you my childhood, my adulthood, what one of the major changes in my life, I was fortunate enough to meet what I call a mentor. And everybody should find them. Let me say this again. Everybody that wants to go up in life, to become more, you have to find a mentor, someone that's been successful that can teach you. I didn't say teach you. Remember that, not give you. But a guy by the name of Jim Rohn, which has written a lot of books, the late Jim Rohn, some of the things he taught us was amazing, amazing. And he talked about pride. He talked about the ladder of success, he calls it. Everyone has to learn to climb the ladder of success. And you're right, some people only belong on the first rung of a ladder. So if you give people money, the basic money they live, they will never want to go to the second level, the third level, the fourth level. One of the biggest things that changed in my life, and I know that a lot of people never have the courage to do this, is quit taking a check. By that I'm saying quit being a W-2. Quit taking payroll. Quit your job and say, look, from now on, I want to get paid what I'm worth. So you have to sacrifice and have the courage to go on commission. And people that are commissioned will earn what they're worth. If they're worthless, they'll be broke. If they want to strive, they will grow and they will grow. Honestly, I've had a lot of careers, and I've also had a lot of jobs, more jobs than most people, so I'm not afraid of anything. I do not know what the word unemployment means. I've never been on unemployment. And because of my pride, I will never be unemployment. Even today, I don't care. I'll go find myself a job. And just understand, job in my world, I was taught, it's an acronym, just over broke. So if you have a job, yes, you're just over broke. And honestly, there's way too many children going to college today. There's going to college, like I heard stories where kids just want to go to college to party, to get away from their parents, yeah. Get away from the trolls or parents that won't let them party, do what they really want to do. I said, let them do it. At their expense, mm-hmm. Let them work a full-time job, two jobs. I've worked two jobs. I've worked three jobs. I still work two jobs. I don't know what they are, but I'm always working, no matter what. And this job will never, ever kill you. What kills you will become sedentary and lazy, and we are filled with lazy people.
Oh, yeah, no question about that. One of the things that, you know, clearly our political elites, and again, I'm talking both parties here, folks. This is not just, you know, endemic in the Democrat Party. This is Republicans, too. But Democrats especially are very good at sowing the seeds of divide, right? Obama, you know, going back 12, 13 years, we weren't a divided country. We were still coming off of 9/11. You know, we were still, and I still think in general, I think for the most part, you know, most of us get along, right? I don't think there's this as great of a divide as the media makes it out to be, right? But the media, along with their Democrat overlords, I guess, or accomplices, or I mean, the media clearly is just a propaganda arm of the Democrat Party, but they're continuing to sow the seeds of divide. Look at this latest sad incident, right? I think a very young, 13, 16, I don't know, a young girl was shot and killed. The media and the left wing of this party, or the Democrats, are out there blaming the police officer. This girl was about to stab another girl. What did you expect him to do, right? But there's no consequence for their actions. So, of course, they get in there and they're sowing the seeds of divide. Well, here we go. Yet another police shooting. Well, maybe we should talk about the girl who was about to stab another girl. How did we get to a point where that seems to be okay and somehow the police officer is wrong for shooting the girl and protecting the one that was about to get stabbed? But it's always, look at the Derek Chauvin, bad cop, so don't misunderstand. But that wasn't a fair trial, right? You got Maxine Waters, you got Joe Biden saying, you know, you got BLM, you know, threatening to say, we're going to burn down your city if you don't convict them. You know, that's activism. That's not justice, right? So every opportunity they get, Obama was the master of this. When he came in 2008, right out of the gate, it was, well, those people in Massachusetts, those police officers acted stupidly because they arrested a black man, misunderstanding, for climbing through a window when it was his own house, right? But look, if you saw somebody climbing through a window in a neighborhood, you'd probably stop and ask questions. They didn't rough him up. They didn't take him. They didn't book him. They arrested him. They realized it was his house. It was a misunderstanding. But Obama came right out. The police acted stupidly right out of the gate, right? And then he had his famous beard to get back together. But he didn't stop. Then it was Trayvon Martin. And again, I'm not excusing what Zimmerman did. I think he was a fool for thinking he was some sort of a Rambo to follow this kid to begin with. But the fact of the matter is the kid jumped him and was beating him up and ground pounding him, and he was fighting for his life. He shot and killed Trayvon. And it's sad because you lose a young life. It ruined his George Zimmerman's life as well. But sadly, instead of, you know, talking about, well, how did we get there, right, and fixing some of the issues, right, they put Trayvon up as a sweet young kid, right? They don't show any of the pictures of him holding a gun or any of the pictures of him posing with a firearm or a weapon. No, no, no. What they do is they talk about, well, you know, Obama came out and famously said, if I had a son, he'd look like Trayvon, right? In every single instance, Obama decided to stoke the flames. And unfortunately, that's how we got BLM. You know, the last incident was Michael Ferguson. Michael Ferguson robbed a liquor store, fought with police, charged a police officer, was shot. That police officer's life was destroyed, and the Democrat Party continues to this day to repeat the false narrative of hands up, don't shoot. Not a single witness, not a one, mm-hmm. that was at the actual grand jury. They couldn't find a single witness that corroborated that hands up, don't shoot story. And yet all the Democrats on the floor of the House came down with their hands up. They're still saying today, hands up, don't shoot. Michael Brown was an innocent guy. No, he wasn't. Michael Brown was a thug. He attacked a police officer. Let me give you guys a hint, okay? Let me just give you a tip. If you don't fight with the police, you have a lot less likelihood of being shot. If you don't confront police with a weapon, you have a much higher probability of not being shot or killed by police. If you don't flee from police, you have a much better chance of not being shot by police. If you don't run to your vehicle for a weapon, you have a much better chance of surviving an encounter with police. In almost, not all, there are certainly bad cops and there's bad apples in every bunch, right? And we've had some bad situations. But in most cases, these are armed people. This girl who was about to stab another girl was armed. And the thing is, the CBS just came out recently and they showed this Chicago shooting of this 13-year-old kid. I mean, these are young children. CBS edited out the gun, took it out of the headline and said, police shoot innocent unarmed black man. Oh, really? It was a kid, black kid or whatever. But the Chicago Police Department said, that's not true. They released a video that showed the kid had a gun in his hand, right? The kid had just robbed at gunpoint tried to carjack two other people. That's why the police were there to begin with. He fled the scene with a gun. He came around a corner, confronted police with a gun in his hand, and he got shot and killed, right? It's the police's fault. Now you got the media editing out the gun. You got the media not telling you the whole story. The media originally came out and said, this poor young girl was shot and killed by police. Never a mention that she was about to stab somebody else. Isn't this what the Communist Party did? I know that they did this in Russia. It was about pitting people against each other, neighbor against neighbor, even family member against family member. You heard it in New York. Talk about Erie. You got Gail Bernstein, the Erie County Health Department executive, saying, turn in your friends, turn in your enemies if you know they're not quarantining or they're not wearing their mask. Turn on your neighbors. Turn them in. Here's the tip line. What does that say to you?
I brought up earlier, my father came from a family of 12. My uncle, which was a veterinarian in Cuba, yes, he was the most successful of all of us. His own sister, my father's sister, my uncle's sister, turned him in when he was hiding. Because, of course, he had the most. And she was envious of her own brother. Mm-hmm. So I do not even know her name. They just said, one of my sisters, one of your aunts is a communist. Never knew her name. She was a communist. So he turned in. He was able to escape in a little tiny rowboat with three other men, only because he knew where the North Star was. That's the only thing nautical.
So what did she? So he was successful. He had money. He was doing well. What did she turn him in for? And what was she?
Envy.
So she just said, "He's got money. Go take it."
Yeah, go take it and share it with me. Take it from him and give it to me. Give me more. I deserve more. I should get as much as him. and make us all equal. So, by the way, and in communism, the first thing is Fidel Castro, you cannot take away two things from him. He was a great orator.
Yeah, so was Obama.
Very good. Good comparisons, why I brought it up. And the second one is, if you realize Fidel Castro, of all the communist dictators, he lasted the longest. Mm-hmm. You cannot take that. So he surrounded himself with other very, very strong politicians or whatever, bodyguards, whatever it took to keep alive, until cancer finally caught up with him. Yeah. So, but one of the things he was a master of, first thing he takes over, and I saw this happen in Mexico recently, they took over the media. Uh-huh. Right now, you ask anybody who controls 90% of the media, the socialist does. The Washington Post is controlled by socialism.
Yeah.
All of us. So they will publish everything. My local newspaper contacts me every week trying to get me to back, you know, buy a subscription. I says, why? It's a liberal rag.
It's propaganda.
Exactly. I said, it's all garbage in it. And I said, as simple as a football team. My football team won a national championship, and you didn't put them on the front page of the sports page.
Right.
So I just hang up, and I said, nope. And they delivered the newspaper for a year for free. Then they asked me if I wanted it. I said, of course not. I said, my back hurts from carrying all that crap in the recycling bin.
Yeah. Go back to your uncle for a second. So your sister, or your aunt, I should say, calls what, a communist official?
Yep.
And says, go take money from my uncle and give it to me.
No, where he was hiding.
So he was hiding out. Or was he hiding money?
Well, essentially, you don't hide money. You hide in the bank. He had money in the bank.
We had money in the bank. Okay.
Yeah.
So she says, I want that money. So he has to flee the country at this point.
Exactly.
Would they jail him for having too much money? I mean, was the fear? Why did he leave, I guess? What was the idea behind getting out of the country?
And by the way, in this country, it's no different than Cuba. There's jails and there's prisons. Mm-hmm. Jails short-term, prisons long-term. So they would have put him in a prison.
Why?
Why? Because he had money he didn't want to give up, or he had whatever. And understand, they also had the worst thing that Cuba did is basically scaring the most successful thing they had in Cuba with the intelligent people. Those are the ones that got out.
Right.
So all that was left behind is the people that wanted and didn't want to work or didn't know how to work. That's why today Cuba has no product to offer, period. Nothing. They were par with the U.S. dollar. That means it was equal value at one time. They have nothing to offer. They have no sugar. My father and my uncle own a farm. They left it to their youngest brother. And he worked that farm for him and his family. And he had crops, and he would harvest crops. And then once a year, he was surprised the first time the militia showed up with military trucks. And he thought they were raiding the house. He goes, no, we're here to take half your harvest. He goes, why? He goes, it's for the people. It's for the people. So he put up with it. On the third year they came to pick up, there was nothing. Nothing. He says, now I am the people. He says, I want you to give me half. He goes, you can't do that. He says, why not? Everybody else does it. So he became one of them.
Yep, so that's how it happens. Exactly, yep. What happens. That's a perfect analogy, because that's actually a big part of the founding of this country, or not the founding of the country, but the story behind Thanksgiving, right? What happened when this country was first formed, and this is, we don't teach this at all. You know, Rush Limbaugh used to talk about this story every Thanksgiving. He would share this story, and it's true. And you can go back and you can look in historical documents. But when they first came to this country, and they set up their communities, what they did was everybody was required to produce a certain amount for the community, right? And the exact same thing happened. Somebody got lazy and said, well, yeah, Joe down the street will do it, or Eli will do it, or whatever. And person from person, they all stopped eventually producing because they thought somebody else was going to do it. And that winter, many of them starved to death. You know, they did not have enough food. And what happened because of that was, it's kind of how the free market capitalist system was born, right? That's how they decided eventually to say, we can't do this again, right? We're going to allow you to profit from your labor, what you do and what you produce. How we're going to do that is, we're going to set up a central store so that instead of just giving it to the communal group so that they can take what they need, you can sell your goods to the store and the store will resell them to the people. And as a result, the people that were more industrious, that worked harder, that were able to do better, you know, farming, or understood, you know, supply and demand, that maybe were farming things that nobody else was. And so, you know, that's the industrious people became the successful people. They made more money. They bought more land and so on and so forth, right? But that's how this country was, back to its founding, is how we got to where we are with free market capitalism, right? Everybody, you know, producing on their own. This is a very much a individualistic or a family-oriented society, right? It's and it works. It works very well. It works better than any other system has ever worked in human history, right? And so to say that, well, capitalism doesn't work, you got to go back to communism when you have, you know, a situation after a country after country after example after example after example where it's failed. So obviously your uncle must have been super fearful to be willing to get into a rowboat, you know, into the ocean, right? And he rowed, what, north to Miami? Where did he end up? Did he hit the point that he wanted to?
Well, what's interesting is he knew where the North Star, so needless to say, they had to go at night. And they followed the North Star, and they finally want them to realize there is a lighthouse. So they thought there was a lighthouse for Key West. Well, they didn't realize they got all the way up to Marathon. So it was the lighthouse of Marathon. But they got there. And today, my uncle's now passed away. The U.S. government, when they found out he was a veterinarian, he wasn't sponsored. So they offered him a job right away to become a veterinarian from sunny Cuba to Nebraska.
Oh.
He had to move to Nebraska, sent a Cuban to Nebraska that did not speak English.
Yeesh.
So he used to write us about the letters, you know, taking care of the cattle and so on in the snows that were 8, 10, 12 foot high.
Yeah.
So, but you had to do what you had to do.
But the fear must have been, I mean, to be willing to risk your life to get into a rowboat, mm-hmm. into an ocean, and just by the North Star, I mean, you must have a pretty healthy, you know, fear understanding that if I go to this prison, I'm probably not coming out.
That is correct. And a lot of Cubans, they never talk about it, never came out. So listen, I also want to go back to that little farm. Somewhere on that little farm, my father and my uncle hid all their guns. So their guns are actually buried somewhere on that farm. Huh. So I'm telling you, it's happening in this country.
So that's something else that happened, right? So Fidel Castro, you know, talk me through the process of, you know, it's a military coup. He takes power. At what point did they start to take away guns from people and force people like your father and your uncle to have to bury them in the yard?
So I'm going to go back to him being an orator. He was such a great orator that the people in general, thought he was actually a wonderful, wonderful Democrat until the more, let's say, elite people of Cuba says, no, this guy's a communist. And people didn't want to believe him until he started showing his real truth when he took over the media, and all of a sudden everything changed. And then the second thing is he took over the military and basically just disseminated it, made it really, really small except for his people. And then he went after the police departments. He controlled them. And that's it. And by the way, we're seeing the same identical signs. We're attacking the police to make the police smaller or totally get rid of the police. This is going to be the Wild West again. I look at it, I said, look, the solutions, and I apologize, because there are a lot of nice, intelligent American black people here. Oprah Winfrey is a multi-billionaire.
She's the wealthiest black woman in the country.
That's
actually, she's one of the most, just period, black woman, doesn't matter.
In the
she's
world.
One of the most, she's one of the wealthiest people in the world. That's
and
right.
By the way, she's earned it all.
Absolutely, every bit of it.
And her ancestors were probably slaves in this country too.
So, maybe.
No excuses made. She's made it. She's earned away. I mean, Dr. Phil actually works for Oprah.
That's right. Well, you can. I mean, look, you can go down a whole list with Obama. I mean, you want to talk about being able to do anything you want. That should have been his message. Yep. That's the sad part. We had an opportunity in this country to change the narrative and say, look at me. I'm in the White House now. I am proof that there are no more glass ceilings for African-Americans or he's obviously a half and half, whatever. We can do anything you want. You can get there. You can be in the White House. Look at Kamala Harris. She's black, right? She's a vice president of the United States. What's her message? Well, you're held back because of your skin color. Well, you weren't. I mean, again, why? It's so sad because we had a black president who literally could have stood up and said, we need to pull ourselves up by our bootstraps, and anybody in this country, we have gotten where we need to be, where we can accomplish anything that we put our minds to. Look at all these black leaders throughout the country, business leaders, CEOs, mayors, governors, congressmen, congresswomen, you name it, we have achieved it, And I can honestly say we're at a point in this country where we've gotten probably as close to equality as we'll ever get. But he didn't say that. What he said was, those police officers acted stupidly. If I had a son, he'd look like Trayvon. Hands up, don't shoot. You didn't build that. I mean, on and on. I could use example after example of how he divided this country and basically told, sadly, African-American communities that, you know, you're where you are because of white conservatives, as opposed to you're where you are because of elite Democrats of all colors, especially, sadly, the people like Al Sharpton that take advantage of their own people. I've never seen anything like that. Where Cubans help Cubans when you guys came to the country and so on. Italians helped Italians and Irish help Irish. And you look at what the Chinese and the Asians are able to do to help each other in these communities. And they work together for the betterment of their own community and for society at large. But you can't say the same thing, sadly, in a lot of, you know, inner city communities that are predominantly African-American. They're killing each other. They're robbing each other. They're holding each other back. And sadly, in a lot of cases, there are successful young black kids that are doing great, that want to escape that cycle of poverty, that are pulled back in by their friends or other people. They're beaten down. They're targeted oftentimes because of their success. Maybe that goes back to the envy thing.
I would honestly disagree with you. I'm telling you, I've heard this term since I was a little kid. My parents... the good thing is they didn't stay in Miami, Florida. By the way, all Cubans had to go through Miami, Florida. Mm-hmm. Just like Italians and people came through Ellis Island, through Miami, Florida.
Yep.
Then we moved to a little country town. Later on, I found out it was the home of Mel Tillis, the country singer.
Oh, okay. So like, Mel Tillis?
I grew up with the Tillis family. So the Tillis family were just the people that owned a funeral home, by the way. But they had money, so we got to play in their yard and stuff like that. But I say... it's not the inner cities. It's the government. The government, and this is communism.
Well, it's the government that created the situation. I absolutely agree with that.
But the government keeps them weak. I heard this term when I was growing up. I did have black friends, and they would say this term I never understood as a child. The white man is keeping us down. The white man is keeping us down. And it is true. And how the white man keeps the black American down, he feeds them a free phone. If you vote for me, I'll give you a free phone. Hey, if you vote for me, I'll give you the stimulus check. Yeah. Oh my God, I get, you know, $1,000, $5,000. Oh my God, I make that in a day.
See, I think it's worse than that because they do that. There's no question about it. But what they have also done is they have destroyed the education system for these cities. And they really have. Yeah. And you can blame the teachers union and their incestuous relationship with the Democrat Party. Because when you look at, I've said this for a long time, how do you have two completely competing different interests trying to vote for the same politician that supposedly is going to make both sides happy? How do you have, you know, folks in inner cities that really need school choice, that need better education opportunities for their kids? I mean, Buffalo has a 50% graduation rate. One out of four kids graduating from the city of Buffalo, if they graduate, will go to prison at some time in their life. These kids are graduating, I use that very loosely, graduating from high school with a third degree English and a second degree math skill level, right? Mm-hmm. This is a travesty. So you're right. They are getting the handouts and they're being enticed with the free candy. But worse, they're being deprived of the education that will give them the opportunity to get ahead oftentimes because the teachers unions fight against school choice. First of all, tenure is the worst thing ever, right? Oh, you can stay here forever no matter how bad of a teacher you are because you've been here long enough. What is that? Could you imagine that with doctors? Oh, yeah, I know you killed the last four patients you operated on, but hey, you're a tenured surgeon, so keep up the good work, Bill. I mean, it's stupid, but we do that in schools. We protect the unions, and especially public sector unions, are there to protect the worst employees of the group, right? Not the best. And as a result, you know, they're not getting the education that they deserve, sadly. And I don't know how you get ahead when you have a second or third grade math skill. I don't know how you, unless you are able to educate yourself. And so the teachers union wants to keep control over that. They want the money to enrich themselves. They don't want school choice. They don't want competition. They don't want to have to be judged by the results, right? What they say is, well, don't judge by the results because the inner homes are broken. And that's true too, partly. But you can't always point the finger at something else and just say, well, it's because of the whole broken homes. It's because of this. It's because of that. When in reality, a lot of it is because of the lack of education, sadly.
That is one. But I'll tell you one of the things you're missing in your whole vocabulary, the word choice. I had choices. From the day I was born, I chose. I wanted more. I wanted candy when I was a kid. And my father's one that said, look, you can have as much candy as you want. You got to get a job. I was 5 years old.
Yeah.
So I said, where do I get a job at five? My father goes, well, you can do the newspaper route, or you can work with your brother that's mowing lawn. So I chose to work with my brother. So that's choice. And I don't know why it is people today are excuse prone. Says you make choices every day. And they're tough choices. Do you want more? Go out and earn it. If I really want more, if you want to lose weight, make that choice. And you talked about education. Now, I'm going to prove you wrong. There are people that make a choice to change. And I'll never forget Lawrence Thompson, also known as Larry Thompson. I met this gentleman. He had a ninth grade education. And he was teaching me. And I was listening to him carefully because that particular month, this was in the 80s, he made $15 million that month with a ninth grade education.
Wow.
And then Lawrence Thompson taught us some wonderful, wonderful thing. Is one of the best things I'll never forget. He called it Larry 1 and Larry 2. Is Larry 1 is driven. And then Larry 2 is that guy that gets sidetracked. And Larry 1, every once in a while, has to look in the mirror and says, whoa, you promised to do this, 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 and this to make this kind of money, and you're goofing off. You got a friend coming over. You're not going to work today. I said, we're going to just adjust your pay schedule. Then he actually ended up. So I learned to talk to myself, it's okay. You actually talk to somebody of equal intelligence, and you're the one that has to be hard. Quit making excuses. Quit blaming your parents. Quit blaming your society. Listen, I didn't come with money. By the way, I never went to a private school. I had to ride this stupid bus, and I didn't want to ride that bus. By 13, I had a car. I chose, yes, it wasn't a new car, but by 13, I was driving a car. And I'll look back, and I'll tell you honestly, I was illegally driving. I was in middle school.
I was going to say, what was the driving age back then? Because you're not that much older than I am.
No. But I looked older than age. But I remember at middle school, what we used to call junior high, I drove a car. But I needed a car to get to school and get to work.
Right.
Get to school, get to work. And my parents says, as long as you work and make your own money, we can't tell you what to do with it. I paid my own insurance. I paid my own car. I paid for everything. If I wanted food, I'd go out and buy my own food. But certain things, you have to want to improve yourself. I'll never forget driving that car, going to a gas station. It was the very first. The man gets out, he's pumping gas. And I left my car, went over there, and says, how did you buy it? He looked at me like I was crazy, going to rob me something. I was a kid. And I just stood there waiting. He finally goes, what do you want? He goes, I want to know how you got this car. This is beautiful. And he just looked at me crazy. Finally, says, look, I really need to know. He says, why do you want to know? He goes, because one day I want to have one of these. Then he realized I was serious. He goes, well, he says, I bought it. I says, no. How did you make, or what did you do to get to the point that you can afford this car? He goes, well, that's going to take some time. I says, okay, let's go have coffee. I bought a millionaire coffee. That's it. And he voluntarily drove across the road to a coffee shop. We had coffee. And he told us all his struggles and his family struggles. And by the way, his ancestors were slaves. They were slaves that were put in cages and everything and brought over here to work the mines from Ireland. Not from Africa, from Ireland. A lot of his family came over as slaves, all males in the beginning. And when they finally got some money, they brought over their family. So, but he earned every single penny. And I was driven. And by the way, I do not want a Rolls Royce now because I know what it is. I know there's a lot nicer cars, or you don't need the latest car. So that's the other thing, is people spend way too much money on things they really, truly don't need.
Yeah, well, again, we're a disposable society, so it's always about, you know, wanting more and then just throwing out and discarding and whatnot. But I think in a lot of these urban, you know, communities and these inner cities, yeah, you know, I think there's a lot of parents that do want the choice, that do want to, they're desperate to get their kids a better education. They're desperate to break that cycle of poverty. And you see that in places like New York City. When they open up a new charter school, or they have a charter school, the waiting list, you might have 30 or 300 openings for that school.
you'll have 30,000 applicants or 3,000 applicants. And yet, you know, they put a stoppage on any more charter schools. We have a cap in New York at like 200 or something like that, right? Why? Because teacher unions are afraid of competition. They're afraid of another charter school, which all do phenomenal usually. Here's what happens. If a charter school doesn't do well, they shut it down.
Yeah.
If a charter school doesn't do well, nobody enrolls their kids, right? They go out of business. If they're not doing a good job, they go bye-bye. What happens if a public school is not doing a good job? We give them more money, right? We give them more resources, right? Why don't we shut them down? Why don't we hold them? Look at what just happened in Florida. And I'm happy about this, by the way. I'm really happy about this. They just arrested yesterday, I believe, Robert Runcie, the superintendent of the Broward County Schools, right? They're holding him accountable. He lied under oath during the grand jury and whatnot about what he knew about the Parkland school shooting. He lied. He covered it up. He lied. They arrested him, holding him accountable. That's nice, right? It's nice to see accountability. Sadly, it's not going to bring back the dozen plus kids that were killed in Parkland, but it does at least say in the state of Florida, we are going to hold you accountable. In places like New York, there was a teacher, the principal, Crystal Bart. She was at, I can't think of the school, McKinley High School maybe. This woman, I went after her big time on the radio. She harassed a student. She was consistently bullying a student. This is your principal. She should have been removed. She should have been fired. She should have been stripped of her pension. She should have been thrown out right on her ass, right? But you know what they said in the school district? Well, she's got tenure. And for us to remove a tenured union person at an administrative level, that's going to cost the school about $250,000 just to fight that legal fight. So she's still there. Like last I checked, she maybe had moved on now. This will go back over a decade ago. But in a place like New York, when you have a failing school, when you have a failing leader, when you have somebody who absolutely is not for the children, they don't get held accountable. They don't get removed. That's the problem that I have with the way that the public sector unions are and these public school systems. I'm a big proponent of school vouchers. Let parents take the tax dollars that they're paying and choose the school that they want to put their kids in. It doesn't have to be a full wide open voucher system, but school choice is very important. Look at Florida. They do it by county. You have an opportunity to move your child from the high school or the middle school to another high school or middle school within that county, right? There are schools that are what we used to call magnet schools, like a Florida Suncoast or whatever it's called, right? I know that's one of the top high schools in the country, right? You can apply no matter what part of the county you live in for your child to go there as long as they're qualified and they have the grades, right? They're not stuck because they're geographically in this region that they have to go to this particular school, right? There's some flexibility. There's some opportunity. As a result, there's more competition. More competition means that the consumer, the customer, in this case, the kids and the families, win. There's never a case where more competition has been bad. I can't look at a case to say, well, more people entering the space in cell phones have made everything more expensive. No, it made everything cheaper. Right? You used to have to pay through the nose for a cell phone. You used to have to pay for international calls after a certain hour, every text message, which it cost. What happened? Well, more competition happened, right? Smaller companies like T-Mobile and new businesses sprang up and created that competition. Consumers win. Why would we look at education a different way? Well, we clearly, if we added more competition to education, we'd all win. Look at where we're losing, where there's no competition. Well, look at the internet and look at the social media platforms. Right, we have these tech oligarchs in California, right, in Silicon Valley. Has that made the social media platforms better, or has it made it worse? I would argue it's made it worse. Right, they've taken off people out of free speech. They've eliminated people. So what we need is more competition. More competition in schools would give these inner city kids an opportunity, and their parents, more importantly, to enroll their kids in a school that's going to actually give them an education and give them an opportunity to go on and do wonderful things in life, right? Become productive members of society. So, yes, you're right. You know, if you have the desire, no matter where you're born, you look at, and parents play the most important role. You're absolutely right about that, too. You look at Dr. Ben Carson and at his amazing story, right?
Amazing parent, black man.
Right? Single parent, right?
Yeah.
Grew up shitty schools in Detroit, right? Horrible schools, right? His mom made him sit down and read every single night. He didn't realize till years later that his mom couldn't read, right? Do the importance of it. He was the first surgeon in the world to separate conjoined twins conjoined at the head.
Yeah.
Not because he was black or white, or because he had the drive and he had the parenting that cared to tell him, Ben, you could do whatever you want in life. Whatever you could do, sky's the limit. And he knew it, and he believed it, and he did it. And he became a world-renowned and obviously a huge position in the Trump administration, but more importantly, a world-renowned surgeon, right? That's amazing. But he had the opportunity because of his mom to get that education that he may not have had. A lot of these parents don't care. That's sad.
No, but you keep bringing up education, education, education. I'll turn around and ask anybody here that's a professional, how many years of education have you had? And when I sit with people, everyone can tell you, let me say most people have at least gone through 12th grade.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the educational level. Now, the people that chose to go higher, that was a choice.
Yeah.
To get a bachelor's degree, to get a master's degree, to get a doctorate. But once you reach the professional level, I don't care what you are, including myself and including Mr. Wiggle, we have something called continuing education. We continuously have to learn. Most people go get an education, they never pick up a book again. And the other one I want to remind you, there was a great, great president by the name of Abraham Lincoln that was 100% self-educated, and he became president of the United States of America, the greatest country in the world then and the greatest country in the world today. So education is honestly, is also a matter of choice.
Yeah, well, that's true. There's no question. I think that, unfortunately, a lot of these kids from a very, very young age are indoctrinated,
yeah,
not educated. Yeah. So they're being told at 5, 6. I mean, look, we're teaching, critical race theory to 6 and 7 year olds. I mean, 5, 6, and 7 year olds are being taught that, you know, this country is inherently evil and racist, and because of that, you're probably not going to get ahead. You know, that's hard to undo when they're in class, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday through Friday. Well, at least in most states there. I can't say that about New York, but.
But you cannot do that. You cannot, I don't care what they teach, you cannot do that to the Asian families. You can't do that to the Indian families.
That's true.
It's going to be very hard to get into the Hispanic families because the parents are on top of those kids all the time.
Right.
All the time. So if you start at home with a strong parent, so look, they're going to try to tell you this, especially if you're a boy and the teacher's trying to convince you you're a girl.
Yeah.
There are some weird things happening in this country, and I'm telling you, this country is headed. This is why I stood. And it starts with just a little bit, a little bit, a little bit, and then becomes, before you know it, they have taken control. And then they're taking control of the strongest thing we have, which is our minds. It's not weapons. It's not money. So my father taught us the only thing communism can never take away from you, it was in your brain. So learn. And then, by the way, we talked about this. I had to go through a course in high school, and you could not graduate in high school when I went there without the course, Americanism versus Communism.
You know,
I aced the class.
I'm glad to hear that. And Governor DeSantis, God love him, in Florida has just reinstituted mandatory American civics in high school as a requirement for graduation. And how is that not an automatic in every single classroom across the country? But we don't teach kids that to love America because the teachers hate America. A lot of these white liberals, especially, they hate America. Why? I have no idea. A recent study came out, by the way. The group that was the most unhappy, take a wild guess, liberal men. Liberal men. Why? Because they're married to liberal women. That's why. If I was married to a liberal woman, I'd be miserable too. Trust me, right? So anyway, all right, we got to probably wrap this up. We're long, right? So look, folks, thank you again for listening. I know it was a long one. Tony, thank you so much again. Yes. I really appreciate you sharing your story. I want to do this again, maybe on the radio as well.
Okay.
And I want to have an opportunity to take some calls because I think there's a lot of people that would like to probably call and ask you questions about your upbringing and you know, your knowledge on Cuba. And I know you still talk to people there. But they've wiped that off the media. They've wiped off anything about Venezuela, anything about Cuba, anything about communists. Now that the Democrats are back in charge, that's all good. But even under Trump, because they control the media. So anyway, if you need us throughout the week, folks, we do manage money for a living. go to our website, thefinancialguys.com. There you can find everything that we do, all our social media links. If you like what you heard and you want to hear more of it, do us a favor. Give us a thumbs up and hit the like button. That helps us out a ton. If you subscribe to our channel, you'll also get the notifications whenever we release a podcast or a new video or new anything that we're doing. So we'd appreciate that as well. So anyway, thank you very much again, Tony. I appreciate it. I'm Glenn Wiggle. On behalf of Mike Lomas, we are the Financial Guys, and we'll see you on Saturday on the Financial Guys Radio Network.